You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Reverend James David Manning. Reverend, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be on your broadcast here today. In the event that some of your listeners may not know exactly an awful lot about me, I passed over church for the past 35 years in Harlem, New York. But God has changed the name of this community of Harlem, the most famous African-American or Hamite black community in the world. God has changed the name of this community to Atla. It means the land where the people shall walk barefoot, because the land is holy ground. And I've been a pastor of the same church for this period of time. And I've watched a lot of things happen in this community over the past 30 years, from the advent of the crack epidemic that struck in the late 70s, same time rap music was making its headway, AIDS as well. People didn't know exactly what it was going on. Homelessness all over New York City, too. Presently, where we are right now, in a different type of social problem of gentrification in the community, formerly known as Harlem, that a lot of people have taken this community, especially people that are sodomites. But I've been around for a while, and I've watched. I've been, if you will, according to the social racial demographics, I've been black all of my life. So I have something to say about how this culture of black people and their relationship with what I refer to as J for the white people in America has evolved. I've lived through the Jim Crow period as well as the civil rights and whatever we call the period we're in now, the period of the so-called first black president. So that's who I am.
Thank you for explaining that. I was going to actually ask you if you could tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, the ones who might be unfamiliar with you, and of course, even the ones who are familiar with you, because I'm sure that millions of people have seen your videos. I know they have. And you have quite the presence and the delivery. And I know that myself and many, if not all of my colleagues, are big fans of yours. And we appreciate everything that you do out there to educate people.
Well, great. I try to do my best every day, so I'm glad that you and those you are familiar with and your listeners do pay attention to what I have to say.
Yes, absolutely. Reverend Manning, are you from New York City? Were you born there?
No, I wasn't born. I was born in rural North Carolina on the eastern coast of the south end of that huge state of North Carolina, close to the South Carolina border. I spent the first 18 years of my life there. I graduated from a high school there in North Carolina. It was a segregated high school. I grew up Jim Crow. I drank from colored water fountains. Even though the Brown versus Board of Education decision with Thurgood Marshall before the Supreme Court, separate but equal, was declared unequal in 1954, as late as 1965, when I graduated high school, the little town and county in North Carolina where I graduated from still had not integrated this high school system, still had colored water fountains and white water fountains, and still Jim Crow was very pronounced, even after the march on Washington in 1963 by Dr. King. I was not permitted to sit down in an actual restaurant in the very town I grew up in. Of course, I spent most of my time in the rural part of the town and tobacco and cotton fields, but even the little town that served as a commercial area where the courthouse was, the police station, the drugstores, and et cetera, a small restaurant. I could not go in at 18 years old and sit down in that restaurant. If I ordered something, I had to go to a side window. So that's how I grew up. And the first 18 years of my life, I believe, remained the most impressionable of my life. I've spent the balance of my life here in the New York City area. But I'll never forget those days growing up Jim Crow and watching what's happening now. There's been a major transition, if you will, of the races, not necessarily for the good, if you're asking me.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would agree with that, not for the good. What year were you born, Reverend Manning?
1947 is the year of my birth, sir.
Yes, it was a disgraceful period in this country's history when a good man such as yourself, as a young man, as a child, was not allowed to do something as basic as drink from a water fountain that other people are drinking from. But I think we've come a long way since that time, even though there are challenges that we face. Do you think that we have made some ground there in that regard?
Well, obviously, we don't have that separation of social interaction anymore, where we have to do separate water fountains, which I'm not sure whether it was founded on mythology or somehow or another. If you ask me what is the predominant theme of why there was this social separation, the two equal competing themes. Number one was that I think that white America felt that slavery and the ending of it through the Civil War was not a just cause. And for them to admit that the Civil War was a just cause would have been for the perpetrators of slavery, the southern United States, that the slave owners were indeed wrong and inhumane. Even though the Civil War put an end to that, socially, those still in power, economically, politically, and otherwise, could impose a separation, which I suppose made them feel affirmed as still being right, but they lost the war, and they lost their sense of independent and independent nation, but they still had that last card to play, such as segregation, schools, and water fountains, and then beyond that, they were still in some sort of a financial structure of power. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why it was so that segregation, color water fountains were a part of the landscape. What's different now and what we see in those people that are following who I refer to as Tribulation Trump, many of them in the same states or have the same kind of a mindset, even as far north as Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan, what they are realizing and why we have a form of racism happening today is because during the period of Jim Crow, white America, and I refer to it as Japheth America, according to the biblical name given to Noah's son, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, they were in power. They ran the police. All police officers were white. All judges were white. All doctors were white. All hospital staff were white. All owners were white. All everything was. So they had economic, financial, social, political, judicial control over everything. What's happening now, and the reason why people are so excited about Tribulation Trump and his attempt to make America white again, is that white folk still have the issue of whether or not they're wrestling with the equality of the races, but they don't have the power they used to have. The small town I grew up in North Carolina, the sheriff was white, all the police officers were white, all the deputies were white. Right now, the chief of police in that very same town is my cousin, a black man, if you will. And you've got the integration process fully vetted throughout the system, and you got people in Congress that are black. And so the white man, even though he may want to do Jim Crow, he doesn't have the power to do that collectively or economically as he did once before. And he sees himself losing his place in America. And so that's why, in many ways, the message that Donald Trump or Tribulation Trump, as I've called him, is resonating. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing or that somehow or another I'm saying that out of a sense of hate. I'm just giving you a social demographic. Since I have lived through both periods and I have been an astute observer of what is going on, but it doesn't necessarily resonate. Someone said to me, why did I call Obama's mama white trash? Was I somehow speaking from hate, hatred, or a sense of superiority? And I said, no. The 40s and the 50s, or the 60s when Obama was allegedly born, any woman that went with a black man, especially outside of marriage, was considered trash. It was the general nomenclature of that time. So I think what I'm trying to outline now in terms of why Tribulation Trump is resonating with so many other people, notwithstanding there's a need for jobs and development in the rural areas that the cities are taking over, that's just how that is. White America see itself losing and losing greatly. Tribulation Trump says he's going to make America white again. So that's kind of where that's at right now.
Well, thank you for explaining that, sir. You were born around the time that a lot of American boys were drafted to go into Vietnam. Did you serve in the military?
No, I did not. I came from New York. They sent me a letter to appear at a place called Whitehall Street in New York City, where you were drafted. This was in 1966, 66 or 67, one of those years. And I was headed to Vietnam. It certainly was where all my schoolmate classmates went. I reported because I was classified what they call 1A. I was top on the list. And went down, but in the intervening time, I had gotten married and had started a family. So when I went down and answered the call, they reclassified me from 1A to 3A and sent me back as a married man with a new child. And I'd classified not to go to war right that moment, so I never went.
In hindsight, that's a good thing, because we all know how that ended up.
My friends died.
Yes, absolutely. Horrible. No reason for the United States, well, to be there, to be anywhere right now, it seems, when we have so much disaster here in our own country. I want to get into this article, Reverend, because when I read the headline here, What's Causing Chicago's Homicide Spike? I mean, does that seem like a stupid question to ask?
The issue is that most people would probably want to feel comfortable knowing that it's happening because of this reason or that reason. So I suppose to raise the question, if you're not comfortable with what is happening further, can it spread to other cities? And what does it mean ultimately for us as a nation? And then for the writer to raise the question, I think, as a hook to get people involved in the process of reading the article, may have been approvable. But Chicago is a unique place in terms of why we're witnessing. Listen, during the 80s, South Central Los Angeles saw carnage to use the term that Tribulation Trump used, of drive-by shootings that it was just unprecedented. That quieted down. Detroit became the murder capital of the world at some point in time. It was just unbelievable. If you lived in Detroit, you're going to be killed if you were black, or Hamite, as I refer to black people as. And that quieted down to some degree as well. New York was pretty bad at the time, but it was never really one of the capitals of homicides, of black-on-black murder or crime. Chicago is uniquely different from both South Central Los Angeles, Detroit, even Miami and Jacksonville at one point in time were, and New Orleans and Houston as well. Wherever you had a ghetto, you had a lot of black-on-black killing. But what is happening in Chicago is different, and perhaps the question ought to be raised, but I don't think they're really interested in the answer.
What is the answer?
It's the judgment of God. You might know, and I've stated this now for more than, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, that Chicago is the political birthplace of the long-legged Mac Daddy, Barack Obama. They gave birth to him both in his state Senate seat and his federal senator's seat, and of course his presidency, albeit an illegal one. He spent 20 years there in the church with Jeremiah Wright, he and Oprah Winfrey and everybody. And he went from the presidency from Chicago, Illinois. And Obama's presidency, in many ways, we're experiencing the complete backlash of white America now, who for 8 years could not even turn on their television because they'd have to look at Obama, and they hated the hell out of him. They hated the idea that he was there, and many felt that he was there unjustly. I'm one of the ones that participated in the birther movement with all of my strength. I held a trial here at our church, convicted Obama and Columbia University of running a sham because Obama never attended Columbia University, though they gave him a degree. But the point is this, is that what's happening in Chicago now is the judgment of God. Obama's done more damage. You know, listeners need to try to understand this. Though the death in Chicago and the killings, they are horrific and they're unseemly and unprecedented, and it seems that they're unstoppable and very painful for a lot of people. Obama's presidency and what he has done to black people globally is far worse. That's just a microcosm in terms of what has happened on a national and global scale to families where black men have abdicated their responsibility towards their children, pumping these young girls full of babies and leaving the woman and the child to fend for themselves to grow up, not knowing where the next bill is coming from, living on government handouts, living in rat and roach infested buildings with no heat in the wintertime. And this is across the board in the black community in every town. And Obama and this racial idea of a black president is key to that happening in the sense of loss, that truth has not been told, that black men have not been held accountable as they ought to be held accountable to respond to their family. So what's happening in Chicago is minute compared to the suffering that's happening globally for black people because of this low-life piece of trash called Barack Hussein Obama. But it doesn't stop there. It gets worse. Chicago is the home city of Jesse Lewis Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, Oprah Winfrey, Jeremiah Wright, and Bishop John Bryant of the racist African Methodist Episcopal Church, a racist organization started by Richard Allen going back 100 years or so. He has his headquarters for the church in Chicago. And with all of this so-called firepower that black people look up to, I mean, Oprah Winfrey is worshipped, and Jesse Jackson, Louis Farrakhan, and Obama, they all come from Chicago. And they're all detrimental to the well-being not only of black America, but people in general. And God is providing the spirit and power for the killing as his judgment. And until black America begins to look at who they are and look at how wretched their leaders are, what they have done and how they have sown these terrible seeds. Remember now, I grew up Jim Crow. And I'll tell you, I'll exchange Jim Crow for a time where we had strong families, fathers in the home. 90% of the homes had a father in the house at night. We were raised with two parents. I'll give up what we have now to go back to Jim Crow if we can avoid all these killings that are going on now and all the children that grow up without fathers with Shanae and all these other babies and this nonsense that's going on that is perpetrated by the leadership of people like Jesse Jackson, Oprah Winfrey, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what's happening in Chicago is not going to be discovered by any of these idiots out here in the media. They wouldn't know their assholes from a hole in the ground. What is happening there is the judgment of God. And until black people begin to respond to God by giving up Obama, Louis Farrakhan, Oprah, and all the rest of them, the killing is going to continue.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. And for the listeners, because I know one of your videos that, well, actually it was in several of your videos where you referred to Obama as the long-legged Mac Daddy. Just give an explanation, a description, a definition of what that is.
Black men, young black men, and some old one fools as well, and they're having sexual intercourse with women or girls or whatever it is that they're doing. A part of that dialogue that they would do is while they were sexing up the young girl, they would ask, "Who's your daddy?" And then they'd sex her while they're in the midst of that traumatic event. And she would say, "You my daddy," while he's sexing her up. That means he's a man as far as sex is concerned. A Mac is an elevated term for a pimp. That means you made your living by putting women out on the street to sell their bodies. You collect the money to manage their business affairs. But they changed it from being a pimp to a Mac. So a young boy who's just got a couple of girlfriends, he's macking them, sexing them up. Maybe he's living with them, and they may be paying the rent, taking care of him. He's not working anywhere. He's just called a daddy. But now a guy who not only does this, but takes it to a step further and puts the woman out on the street to make money for him is called a Mac. So he's not only not just a daddy, he's a Mac daddy. And there are a lot of those. Some of them are small time, and some of them are big time. And they're really professional, big time Mac daddies of the world. There used to be, I don't know if it still is, but up to recently, there used to be a pimp's ball, a national annual convention for pimps to meet and see who was the biggest pimp of the year, who had the most success as a pimp, and as it transitioned from street to hotel to call girls. They'd meet someplace in Chicago or Detroit or New York, Las Vegas. And so the person who was the most successful pimp of the year was called the long-legged Mac Daddy. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy. Ain't nobody never pimped women, both black women and white women. Ain't nobody never pimped like Obama. Obama had old 80-year-old white women sitting in the stands when he was running for office, having conniptions and sexual explosions, screaming at that boy when he stepped out on the stage. You should have seen these old white women and black women. They couldn't contain themselves when Obama was running for president. So he is the most successful Mac Daddy ever. Obama's a long-legged Mac Daddy.
Thank you for explaining that. Those listeners who are in the know about what you're talking about, everything you're saying is absolutely correct. He came out of nowhere. We don't know where he was born. He absolutely did not go to Columbia. There's still that $1 million reward out there. I always say, I wish I went to Columbia because I'm about the same age as him and that I could collect that reward. But nobody has come forward because he didn't go. But it's an amazing thing how this one fella was thrust into the public limelight and did as much as he did. I can't understand it. I guess most Americans are just asleep at the switch if they can't understand that this one guy has no background. He has no history. He never had a job. It's an amazing thing to me. I don't know.
No, but you're absolutely right. I mean, we're in modern-day America, and the fact that this could take place, that this fella could rise up out of nowhere and become the president of the United States. And then when the truth about his not going to Columbia or not being born in Honolulu, the American people allowed the media and other racist promoters to just obfuscate this. But we need to take this one step further. Though we know that Tribulation Trump was born in Queens, we know who his dad and mama were, we know that we don't know a lot about him as well. He never went to Wharton. He lied and said he did. That boy never go to Wharton Business School. He lied. He won't show his taxes. We don't really know a lot about him. There's some stuff going on about him that is equally as fascinating that the media just don't want to deal with. And you can't begin to imagine the hell I caught in Harlem preaching against Obama. I mean, everybody in Harlem hated my guts, and most still hate me today. Except for the grace of God, black folk would have killed me years ago for speaking against their black prince, their emperor, Obama. And I'm still dealing with that as you and I speak. But listen, as an expert at this, if you don't mind my declaring myself on these presidential frauds, hell, Tribulation Trump ain't no different than Obama. He's just as much a fraud as Obama. And what's worse is that the people that support Obama were damn fools, could not be talked to, you couldn't reach them, they didn't want to hear the truth. They didn't care anything about where he came from, whether Columbia. They did not care. All they wanted was something to represent what they call was racial oppression. Well, the same thing is true with Tribulation Trump. They tell me all the time, we don't care about his taxes. We don't care if he didn't file taxes. We don't care if he owes money. We don't care if he didn't go to Wharton Business School. All we want is somebody that can deal with what we see as racial oppression or the fact that we're a minority and a majority in America. They don't care if Donald Trump kicks the calf. They just don't care. the same way black folk didn't care about Obama. So I say, all right, okay, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but for you white folk, y'all a bit late to the game. Black folk beat y'all to being fools over Obama 8 years ago. Y'all are second-class fools, but fools nonetheless, over this orange-haired orangutan called Tribulation Trump, who is a fraud from way back. The man's a psychopath, a liar like you ain't never seen before. And ain't going to do none of the stuff he ever said he's going to do. He needs psychiatric help. The boy does. He needs to see a psychiatrist. That boy is sick as hell, Tribulation Trump is.
It should be the job of all honest media to really not get too close to any of these politicians, to always call them to the carpet and doubt everything that they're saying. And yes, I agree with you that it really doesn't matter what you say or what you know or how you present it, because people want to believe what they want to believe. And that's why I guess it really doesn't make any sense to talk about religion or politics. I try not to. I guess you would agree with that.
Well, I'm a pastor, so I got to talk religion. In fact, that's all I talk. Politics gets intertwined in it, because you're not going to see a world that evolves religiously without a political impact. I mean, you go all the way back to the days of Moses and Pharaoh. Here was the prophet against the Pharaoh, the king, the man of God against a leader of the world. Jesus and the Pharisees. It was Pilate, the governor of Rome, that ordered his execution. So you're not going to get very far if you're going to deal in, to use the word religion, and not have to deal with politics as well, because that is going to be the rallying cry for a lot of people. And it's generally God disdains politicians, and politicians generally disdain God. So they are always at each other's, what I would say, throat, but they're never walking hand in hand. There's never that. If you see that, anybody tell you that politics and religion can walk together in an integrated way is a flat-out lie.
You're right there in New York. I see your address here, your mailing address. It says Otla Ministries. You already explained to the listeners what Otla stood for. 38 West 123rd Street. And you put Otla, New York, 10027, not New York, New York. Does the mail still get there?
Absolutely. It's Harlem. It's the New York zip code. There were times when we first started using the name Otla rather than saying Harlem, or rather than saying New York, New York. Some of the idiots over at the post office wouldn't deliver. But the federal guidelines say this: if you have the street address and the zip code, they have to deliver. New York has a lot of communities. New York City has Soho, has Wall Street, has Times Square, it has Washington Heights, it has East Side, West Side. And you can put any of that on an envelope, long as you put the street and the zip code, it has got to go to that particular address. You don't always have to put New York City. I could put 38 West 123rd Street, Harlem, New York, 10027. They'll have to deliver it. Or I can say Otla, New York. Now, they didn't want to deliver because the creeps didn't want to give acknowledgement to Otla. But through a battle, we forced them into making sure, even if it doesn't say Harlem or New York City, if it has the street address and the zip code, you're going to bring it to my door and deliver it to me. Otherwise, it's going to be hell to pay.
That's terrific. And if folks want to familiarize themselves with you and your ministry, they could just go to otla.org. Is that the best place to direct them?
You know, if they're looking to hear the truth, now if they're looking to hear some pander, partisan ideas, the 11th commandment of Ronald Reagan, speak no ill against a Republican, then stay the hell away from my website. But if they're looking to hear the truth, both on black folk and white folk, because both people make mistakes, neither one of them are saints. And truth need to be told on all of them. If they're willing to that, then come to my website. It's otlah.org, A-T-L-A-H.org. And there you discover we do a large number of things. We have a broadcast we do 3 hours a day, which I just finished, called The Manning Report, The Trust in the Lord Hour. We do preaching on Saturdays all day. So we got a lot of things going on at otlah.org. That's A-T-L-A-H.org.
And, of course, you have a very popular YouTube site as well. I guess they could access that from Otla as well?
Otla Worldwide. It's called Otla Worldwide YouTube.
Reverend James David Manning, Reverend, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. It was a distinct honor and privilege speaking to you, and I'm looking forward to talking to you again real soon.
Okay, thank you very much.